Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 24th of March, recording at 6:51 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And this being the last audio of the week due to the Good Friday holiday, I am doing the big picture long-term outlook. But first, I'm going to give just quick highlights here on markets. Some additional weakness among stock markets in Asia. But in general, stock markets are oversold on a short-term basis and therefore likely to steady somewhat. Now, I feel that upside scope is limited to technical rallies, most of which will probably fail beneath the highs that we've seen this year, and most of those were this month or last month. And that will range sideways at best in what is probably some top extension activity overall. Government bonds, similarly, oversold in the short term, but perhaps even less upside scope in terms of technical rallies due to the justifiable inflation fears. And in terms of currencies, the dollar is seeing a technical rally, and it's not over, but I don't think, but we may well have seen the best part of it. In terms of precious metals, these are becoming oversold, but they really are going to take their cue from the US dollar, with the possible exception of platinum and palladium, which may steady beforehand. And in terms of industrial metals, they don't have quite as strong a dollar correlation as many people feel, but they did react in the general selling, and possibly, some of them are looking a little bit oversold right now. Ditto agricultural commodities, which have seen a big setback. Energy sector, small corrections taken place. Demand is still really strong. Okay, big picture long-term outlook. Secular bear market for Wall Street, long defined here as a generational long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising yields, because investors increasingly realize that they are not in the 1990s, that it is not a buy and hold environment, and therefore they are unwilling to drive equity valuations up to the same levels that they do during bubble years. And so over time, they become accustomed to paying less for equities and they demand more in terms of valuations. Whether that secular bear market looks like a replay of the 67 through 81 period on Wall Street when the Dow had a glass ceiling at 1,025, or is a severer reaction such as we saw in Japan following the bursting of its bubble in 1989-1990, depends very much on liquidity. And this central bank, the Fed that is, has certainly shown no hesitation in providing liquidity when it felt that such measures were necessary, if only for precautionary reasons, or just in case reasons, as in the case of all the Y2K paranoia. Now, are any markets going to uncouple from that Wall Street linkage? Well, not entirely, never 100%. That's a dream of stockbrokers that that there will be real uncoupling. But the best chance, most likely candidate for that far and wide among developed country stock markets is Japan, by virtue of the fact that it completed its bubble, or its bubble burst, 10 years and 3 months before we saw the U.S. stock market bubble burst. Japan went through its own tortures of the damned in a long bear market where valuations certainly increased. The Japanese public is entirely out of the market. The financial sector counts for a small percentage of the economy, the opposite of what you see on Wall Street, in other words. And the chart shows a major base formation, probably in its latter stages. That's why I've increased my long in here today, in terms of my Nikkei futures exposure. Additionally, I've often mentioned the Wall Street leash factor, and by that I mean that Wall Street, it's a little bit like walking the pets. They're all on a leash, and when Wall Street is steady, let alone moving upwards, moving forward, then we do then the leash is loosened, and the more fashionable and fundamentally interesting emerging markets will do exceptionally well. Now, there are more of them in this cycle than in most other cycles, primarily because of the secular bull market in commodities, more about that later, and which has literally transformed the fundamentals for many of these resource-producing economies. And also, there are the interesting stories such as the Eastern European emerging markets with their flat taxes, more competitive wages, better work ethic than in the socialist, semi-socialist countries. And there are, of course, the Asian emerging markets. Now, the key criteria, I think, with emerging markets, other than what kind of liquidity environment do we actually have? Let's get back to and what is the overall trend for equities? We get back to the leash effect. Is going to be governance. And I have grave reservations about governance in so-called Chinese capital, I beg your pardon, so-called, the Freudian slip there, grave reservations about governance in so-called communist capitalist, a bit of an oxymoron that, but communist capitalist countries. So that would apply to China, that would apply to Russia under Mr. Putin. Now, where are we in terms of the most recent action? Well, I mentioned the oversold short-term conditions and the risks in these markets, and the emerging markets are also high beta. So when the leash is let out, they do, as I say, they do exceptionally well. But when the leash is reined in because Wall Street is under pressure, then we do see some pretty heavy selling, and a lot of those markets are very, very thin. The Eastern European markets have been the classic example. Recently, they spiked upwards, type 1 ending, and have come down with a thump. So I think we're, in terms of top formations, we're talking about V-top, right-hand extension, as taught at the chart seminar. Now, moving on, because probably. Oh no! It's a one other sector. Other sectors here. The resources markets. I should emphasize this. The natural resources, particularly the industrial resources, are in secular bull markets, and so I mentioned that in the context of emerging markets. But there's some developed country markets that do spectacularly well against that background, and those would include Australia and New Zealand, but both are overextended, both have given bearish signals. We've had additional follow-through on the downside in both Australia and New Zealand today. So the uptrend consistencies, which were very pronounced and which I've been monitoring all along as my guide, all the uptrend consistencies have been checked by global stock markets, and I would not want to rationalize that message, and indeed I will not rationalize that message. Therefore, I will be lightening where I have positions in rallies. I would certainly be light. I'll be lightening in India and in also in Thailand on a rally. India is my favorite stock market for the very long term, but if I think that I'm vulnerable to further profit erosion over the short to medium term, I'm likely to lighten. No panic on this. And if I had to ride it out, I'd feel more comfortable riding out India than a lot of other things in terms of its long-term long-term potential. Now, also, just lastly on China, those who want to play China through the countries and companies that benefit most from the boom in China. I'd say Japan is a great play on China, and because of its exports, I would say that Thailand is a great play on China because of its exports, ditto Indonesia. Okay, moving on to government bonds now. And I had a long email on this stamp. I'm sorry, folks, I'm behind on my subscribers' emails, but I tried to catch up in the last couple of days, and we'll have a lot more catching up to do when I get back. But I just hope I don't lose track of any of them. I won't brag about the number of emails I get in here today. It's flattering and daunting. Now, in terms of government bonds, I maintain that the secular bull market, 18-year bull market it was, ended in June of 2003. Now, if you look at charts of futures prices and also charts of yields, the patterns confirm that in my view. And when a secular bull market ends, a secular bear market begins at that same instant. I have said all along that we would see a very lengthy ranging top formation process because people would still be fearing the deflation. And then Christopher Wood makes the point today that in fighting inflation, that it'll be deflationary, or the consequence of fighting inflation, Fed raising interest rates, so on, will be deflationary. Well, I would say disinflationary. So, question of semantics here. We're not in disagreement, but the economy then slows, the Fed starts to pump again, as do other central banks, and we pump the system up again and the inflation takes off. And if you don't think there's any inflation out there, well, you're not paying the household bills, is all I've got to say. Now, in terms of government bonds, what I've been talking about is a very lengthy top formation, extensive top formation phase. And the only way to play that, if one is going to play that, I do not want to be long in what I feel is a secular bear market, unless we're considering trading opportunities which do arise. And the trading opportunities occur after we've seen a major sell-off. We've seen a good sell-off here recently, but I don't qualify it as a major sell-off. I still think these markets look quite vulnerable on the charts, and that we will see them move. We will see bond prices move lower before we get the next rally back up, further extending the top formation or just beneath the overall top formation. Depends how much bond prices weaken, bond yields move upwards. And my guess is that we won't see any dramatic moves in here for quite a while. And there are various arguments being put forward saying that there are too many zombie buyers in Japan and there are too many other people who are in desperate need of income for bond yields to rise. That is delusional, in my view. That's the same as the people who said that the US stock market always had to go up because of baby boomers and all their retirement funds that were flowing into stock markets. These are just rationalizations on the part of people who don't want to face up to the fact that all markets are cyclical. And we get long-term secular trends, and we get medium-term trends, and we get shorter-term trends. So enough on government bonds, which are in a secular bear market. Now I'm just going to flip back again to equities for a moment because of new subscribers coming in all the time. And I left out one point in my discussion, and that was that I do maintain that the 2-year rally, which predictable rally starting in March of 2003, has ended, and the first 2 years of presidential terms are tough for global stock markets, that's when we get the weaker relative performances, particularly the second year of the term. So I think, we're going to see markets buffeted in here over the, well, until at least the third quarter of 2007. Okay, moving on to currencies here. We don't get the generational long trends in currencies because no country could withstand a generational long rise in its own currency. I mean, they'd be printing the stuff like stink, and that's what happens. Notice how the Swiss franc, when the Swiss became really concerned about the strength of the Swiss franc, you just produce more of the stuff and keep the return low, the interest rates low, and it does check the advance in the currency. Now, what we see here is another predictable technical rally in the US dollar. Got back down close to that 80 level on the US dollar index. Too many bears around. So another technical rally signaled on the charts, and it is squeezing this carry trade. And the carry trade is very, very large. As you know, some estimates up to, I think that Gerald Minack report that I put up said $350 billion US dollars. Well, that's obviously a guesstimate, but nevertheless, it is big. And we do stand to see more of that close down, and that certainly does contribute to what I've said all along would be more of a ranging year for the US dollar than a trending year. Now, I agree that the longer term fundamental factors of the deficits, not to mention the supply and the wishes of the US administration and a compliant Fed, do not want to see the dollar rallying very much, and they've produced plenty of dollars. Certainly, we can see that Greenspan now wants to get a bit of a, well, wants to rearm the interest rate weapon, get the interest rates up, and also to hopefully check the inflation pressures for a while that have been building up. But as far as the big story is concerned, the Fed has other central banks have sown the seeds for another major long-term inflationary cycle. And that's part of the precious metals and other commodity stories, but I don't want to run ahead too far here. So in my view, I'm still playing a dollar rally, and I'm playing that by having bought the US dollar against the against Japanese yen, as you may recall, and I did that a couple of weeks ago, and it's the first time I've been long the dollar. Really, in quite a while. I think this rally could go a little bit further, as I've said. There's something else I wanted to mention here on the currencies, but it's eluding me at the moment. So forgive me if I drop back, should that point spring back into mind. Now let me get on to the precious metals, where gold and its high beta proxy silver are really in lockstep with what takes place in the dollar. Strong dollar, they weaken. Weak dollar, they strengthen. And that's not going to go on in perpetuity. As the inflation cycle gradually, secular inflation cycle, now gradually becomes more apparent to more investors, we will see, I believe, gold. It'll always be related to the primary reserve currency, but not quite so slavishly. Moreover, and more importantly, I think we'll see it move up against all other currencies as well. We are still in the very early stages of a secular bull market for gold. Now let me drop back just to the US dollar for a moment and say that in talking about seeing a ranging year, my overall view, I've never been of the school that the dollar was going to collapse. My overall view is that we will see the dollar move back down. We'll see it happen this year test that 80 level. It may even go lower, probably will go lower on the dollar index, and probably go at some time over the next few years below that 78 level or thereabouts, which is the historic low, but not vastly lower. So what I've been saying is that the dollar has seen most of its overall bear decline in terms of the market move. In terms of the time frame, we may be years away from the sort of bottoming out process that can sustain more than a short and possibly occasionally medium term, as defined as a few months technical rally. Okay, now gold, I really feel, as I've already said, I don't think the US dollar's rally is over. We've seen the best part of it. Then the flip side of that, in terms of precious metals, must be that I don't think we've seen the complete extent of gold's current reaction, but we've probably seen most of it. Therefore, gold is closer to a buying range than a selling range, but I think that the time to go in and leverage up precious metals, metal positions once again, will be when we do have some technical evidence that the US dollar's rally has peaked, and that is certainly not the case today. Now, platinum and palladium, particularly palladium, may well move a little bit more independently. They haven't in the last few days, although the dollar rally continues here today, and palladium closed up 6.5, and platinum rather closed up 6.5, and palladium up to 225. I own those, and I also own the silver. Silver, interestingly, has been the weakest one recently, which I suppose is not surprising. That's the high beta gold, and the dollar's rally affects gold, and therefore silver more than the other metals. And I like the silver volatility, provided we get the action in both directions, and have been nibbling in silver. It's always a somewhat masochistic exercise, that, but my average cost in silver is mighty, mighty cheap. But anyway, I have been buying more of it, and I'm quite prepared to lightly nibble on silver as this decline continues, and I think it will go a bit further with a strategy. Excuse me, I'm going to switch this off a second just to have a cough. Okay. My strategy, to say, will be to buy a little bit more silver, buying very lightly, allowing for plenty of downside overall, and then hope to, once again, as veteran subscribers have seen me do a number of times over the last 3 years, trade it out on the next rally. And having done that over and over again, it has enabled me to, say, lower my average cost of silver considerably. Okay, I'm not boasting about that. It's just telling you that's the way I trade these things. It'll depend on the nature of the price change activity. Okay, industrial commodities. Now, the dollar is an influence, but the correlation isn't as strong there as you might think, and there is real underlying demand here in terms of very persistent industrial usage. We have that for gold and silver as well. I can hear many of you saying, or don't we have that for them? And yes, the answer is true. But you have these precious metals, with the occasional exception of platinum, trading at contangos. In other words, the futures prices are higher than the spot price, and that reflects the cost of carry, the so-called cost of the carry, interest rate costs. Now, in most of these industrial metals, you have a backwardation, so a premium of the spot price over the futures prices. That indicates very strong demand for the nearby material. And that has persisted pretty much throughout all of these shakeouts. The biggest backwardation is in copper. Now, these industrial metals can be very, very volatile, but this is a major secular bull market story. And it's a better story at this stage of the cycle than the story for precious metals. And I will expect that to remain the case until fear of inflation is very much in the public psychosis, and that's not the case, and not the case right now. Now, did I say psychosis? I should really say very much in public perceptions. Okay, looking at the energy sector, another secular bull market. And I think these are really going to run for a generation or more, as I've said before. Don't forget, we had that 21-year secular bear market in most of these commodities. Now, the energy story. Now, first, oil is the most important commodity in terms of supply and demand. All countries use oil and a great deal of it. They pretty well all use the industrial commodities as well, but nowhere near as much of it, and they can do without. They can't do without the oil. Now, oil is an even stronger story, I feel, over the long term than the industrial metals, and it will remain so until we do get commercial viable alternatives to fossil fuels. And I don't see that happening in a major, major way until nuclear fusion is solved. And that I'll be lucky if I see that in my lifetime, and I hope to live for a good many more years yet. So this is a very powerful bull market story. And in the comparison with metals, for instance, the metals are recyclable. So there's always scrap. Once the fossil fuel is consumed, that's it. It's gone forever. Therefore, I do like having core positions in the energy sector, just as I like having core positions in the metals sector, and that'll be pretty much the case. For years and years and years, I'll lighten this position sometimes when the rallies get overextended, as you've seen me do recently, and I'll also increase them when we get the periodic and inevitable shakeouts. Lastly, in terms of the agricultural commodities, here we have less supply in elasticity, even with the trees, coffee for example, than we do with the industrial metals, where it takes years often to change the production or to increase production significantly in terms of lag times, opening mines, creating refining capacity, and getting the stuff on the market. Whereas with a lot of these crops, you just get into the next growing season and countries can plant more of the stuff. But prices have been historically depressed for quite a long time. They are obviously subject to the vagaries of weather, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if we didn't see fairly turbulent weather conditions in terms of either too much water or not enough water in particular. They're less disease prone than they used to be, given the scientists who've been able to produce disease-resistant strains. And that's contributed to the weak prices that we've seen in agricultural commodities. But when they are depressed, and they've seen awfully good rallies recently and are in a partial retracement phase of those rallies, when we do see further correction, then the agricultural commodities will look very interesting once again, being the cheapest asset play that's around anywhere. So that's pretty much it, folks, as far as the big picture long-term outlook. As you know, I'm not here next week. Owen's in the hot seat, And I've got a few relatives who've arrived, very young relatives, who we will be taking to the beautiful English countryside. So I hope you have a splendid Easter break, if that's something you do. And otherwise, all of you, just enjoy.